she was learning. For the words were Mieliki's song, giving voice to the harmony of this place, Iruladun, this gift of Mieliki. Though Catti Bree, Regis, Wolfgar, and now Brunner had come into this strange paradise, the gift of Iruladun was a gift, most of all, to Drizzt Do'Urden. Catti Bree understood that now. Like the weave of magic she had studied as a budding mage, the patterns of Mieliki's domain were becoming ever clearer to her. Mieliki was of the cycle, of life and death, of the autumn withering and the spring renewal. Iruladun was the spring. Through the words of the song, Catti Bree cast a spell without realizing it. She walked toward her three friends, stepping upon the waters of the pond. As she gracefully drifted over the water to stand before the others, her song became clear to them, not just in the music of the forest, but in specific words spoken in many languages, new and old.
What is old is new again. When magic is rewoven, and the shadows diminish, and the heroes of the gods awaken to walk Faerûn again, what is built can be destroyed, but what is destroyed can be built anew. That is the secret, that is the hope, that is the promise.
The woman closed her eyes and took a deep breath, steadying herself. Silent for the first time since she and Regis had come into this place, a span of many 10 days for them, but of nearly a century in the world of Toril outside of Iruladun, where the magical forest occasionally anchored.
Me girl,
Brunner breathed when she opened her eyes once more, to look upon the forest's newest visitor. Catti Bree smiled at him, then fell over him in a great hug. Regis leaped over and joined in, for many of his days here had been spent in chasing the singing woman, always unsuccessfully. The three broke and looked back at Wolfgar, whose expression reflected the turmoil within. The barbarian had only been here for 3 days in Iruladun's time, and had no more understanding of the place than Brunner, or than Regis even, who had whiled away his many hours here, sitting by the pond, tending his small garden, and fashioning pieces of scrimshaw out of the knucklehead trout bone that always seemed to be readily available.
"You finally stopped that singing,"
the halfling started to say, but Brunner cut him short.
"Ah, me girl!"
he said, running his strong hand, his strong young hand, he noted, across Catti Bree's pretty face.
"So many's the years gone by. Ye've never left me heart, and every road I've been walking's been an emptier way without ye."
Catti Bree put her hand atop his.
"I am sorry for the pain,"
she whispered.
"Surely I have gone mad," Wolfgar roared suddenly, and all turned back to consider him once more. "I was on the hunt," he whispered,
speaking more to himself than to the others, and he began to pace, his long strides propelling him back and forth before the others.
"An old man."
He paused and turned to the other three, holding his arms out wide.
"An old man," he insisted. "A man with children older than I now appear, with grandchildren older than I now appear. What healing I have been given, I do not know. Am I cursed or am I blessed?"
"Blessed,"
Catti Bree answered.
"By your god?"
"Goddess,"
the woman corrected.
"Goddess, then," said Wolfgar. "I am blessed by your goddess? Then I am damned by Tempest."
"No,"
Catti Bree started to answer, and she broke free of Brunner and stepped toward Wolfgar, who visibly winced and backed from her, step for step.
"This is madness,"
Wolfgar cried.
"I am Wolfgar, son of Beornagar, who serves Tempest. I am slain, I accept my defeat and my mortality, but this is no hall of my warrior god. Nay, this is no blessing."
He spat the last sentence at Catti Bree as if casting his own curse.
"Youth?" he asked with a derisive snort. "Healing? Are those blessings? At what cost?"
"It is not like that,"
Catti Bree assured him. Brunner touched her on the cheek and she turned around.
"You died in Gontalgrim, Catti Bree told him. Beside Thibbledorf Puente, yes. But know that you won the day, and were buried with honor beside your shield dwarf and beside the god's throne in the entry chamber.
Brunner started to reply, but the words caught in his throat. How could he know? He asked instead.
Catti Bree merely smiled contentedly, erasing all doubt anyone might have had of her claims.
I'd be a lying old dwarf if I said that me heart's not full in seeing ye, all three of ye,
Brunner whispered. But I'd be a liar, too, if I tell ye that any halls but Moradin's are me place and reward for the life I knowed.
Catti Bree nodded and started to reply, but a rustle turned her back again, just in time to see Wolfgard disappearing into the brush, moving from them at great speed.
Me boy!
Brunner yelled after him, but Catti Bree put her hand on the dwarf's pointing arm to quiet him, then took him by the hand, bade Regis to take her other hand, and led them off in pursuit.
Wolfgar, do not!
She called after the man. You cannot leave, you are not prepared! They caught sight of Wolfgar again a few moments later, crossing a small clearing and running toward a lighter area that seemed to mark the forest's edge. Brunner and Regis tried to speed up and heighten their pursuit, but now Catti Bree held them back, and the very grass around their feet seemed to agree with the woman, or answered the woman's call, the blades rolling up over Brunner's boots and Regis's furry toes to hold them fast in place.
Do not!
She warned Wolfgar one last time, but the stubborn barbarian didn't slow at all and charged to the forest's edge.
Ye stopped us, so stop him!
Brunner told her, tugging at the unyielding roots, but Catti Bree continued to stare after Wolfgar and shook her head. The trees hung thick and dark around him, but Wolfgar saw the light and made for it, hardly aware of his movements. He felt more like he was swimming than running, felt moist and warm, though it was not raining and the forest had seemed dry enough. But he was not in the forest, he realized, and the light became a pinpoint and nothing more, and his movements were jumbled and uncoordinated. He felt as if he had been wrapped in thick cloth and thrown into a pond. He didn't know what he felt, as his thoughts jumbled incoherently. He saw the light, though just a speck now, and he made for it, his body twisted and turning, arms trapped, legs moving weirdly, uncontrollably. The light grew, and he couldn't breathe. Frantic, Wolfgar pushed on more forcefully, and the wrappings around him seemed to flex and writhe. He could only think of a giant constrictor snake or a purple worm. Yes,